Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Market moving insight and analysis. Join Jim Cramer, David Faber, and me, Carl Quintanilla, on the opening bell hour of CNBC Squawk on the Street. Good Wednesday morning. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm Carl Quintanilla with Jim Cramer and David Faber. Futures are solidly red as the COVID spikes in Europe and the U.S. erode sentiment. The finger pointing has begun as to why pre-election stimulus failed. Q3 earnings, for the most part, are the bright spot today. Our roadmap begins with COVID cases surging and stocks set to tumble at the open. Investors do fear an increase in infections could halt the recovering economy.
Plus, of course, we continue to watch earnings. In fact, this morning, the CEOs of both Boeing and GE will join us for interviews. And Andrew was just talking about with Mr. Lonsdale, big tech is going to testify this morning. The CEOs of Facebook, Alphabet, and Twitter will face questions from a Senate committee this morning. And we, of course, will bring that to you. Carl.
Hey, guys, a lot of jitters, Jim, this morning as to what Macron may say later on tonight, European time. Your point largely on social media this morning has been this pre-market weakness is not about the earnings themselves.
Right. I mean, look, we would be in a stay-in-place order if we adopt what Merkel's talking about. Now, we've never been on the same page as Merkel since President Trump came in. She's obviously been far more serious, I would call it rigorous, about hygiene and about masks, about social distancing than our country is. Our country just is not the way of Germany. But I would say that when you see Chicago close all the dining places and restaurants, and then you start thinking about travel and leisure and hospitality, it then bleeds into Boeing, whom we have this morning. And I think that it's impossible to think about Boeing without thinking of, well, once you get there, where can you go? And I do think that that's what we face, which is there's no place to go. Might as well stay at home. But no one's paying us to stay at home like they did back in March. Now we're staying at home and we got nothing to do other than play Take-Two Interactive and the Sony PlayStation. Oops, Sony PlayStation numbers, I didn't like that much. So that's where we are. Not great. Not great.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm listening to you. The market's not great either. It's been a rough week thus far, at least, Jim. You know, the question becomes, though, I mean, we've been through this before. How much is of what is coming is already reflected in stock prices at this point? Are we going to see the bifurcation of the market that we've become so accustomed to in terms of those companies that suffer from stay at home and those that benefit?
Yes. I mean, I think that we go back to the five bull markets I've been talking about, which is 5G, digitization, hygiene, home renovation, and cars, because we need them, because we have to go places and we can't use public transit. And then we revert. The question is, do we revert, David, to Campbell's soup? Can we include Campbell's soup and Coca-Cola in the list like we could in months of March and April? So the answer is after the blast zone today, you usually have a stabilization tomorrow, and those groups will should work. But we do have the wild card of the election. But all these themes do transcend even an election.
Right.
Even an election.
Well, we've got the wild card of the election, and we'll continue, of course, to focus on vaccines and therapeutics and every data point that we get, when we're going to hear from the Pfizer trial. We got some information yesterday during their earnings call, and what else we get. I mean, that would certainly seem to be something else. Now, again, just getting that data or even hearing positive things, which we certainly hope and expect will be the case, doesn't mean that a vaccine is going to be widely available anytime soon, Jim. But given the potential of lockdowns in some of these countries that we're talking about, whether it's Germany or France, and what we're seeing here in terms of new highs in so many states, one would anticipate that will continue to be a focus for the market.
Yeah, I mean, Carl, look, a gloomy market does not necessarily mean a market that you have to sell. Classic example is Microsoft. That was one of the cleanest beats I've seen in a long time. But the expectations were for a very clean beat. The fact that they could have said anything they wanted in terms of a prediction forecast isn't dawning on people at all. The stock did a big U-turn. I think that that's just wrong. But can I buck the market and buy it? No, the market's putting Microsoft on sale. I do get an opportunity to buy it because it's just a remarkable quarter. And all, whether it be gaming, whether it be Azure, whether it be LinkedIn in a turn, whether it be Windows, which is now less than Azure. I don't know. I mean, I like Microsoft, but we have to deal with the fact that the gloom is pervasive. You don't buy gloom the first hour. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. We'll get to some other calls today, Jim, including one from Morgan Stanley about why these phase three events, in their view, are coming along slower than expected. But as you said, earnings are a big piece of the story today. We talked a bit about Microsoft. Boeing is another one. And Phil LeBeau joins us this morning with a very special guest. Hey, Phil.
Hey, Carl. Let's bring in Dave Calhoun, CEO of Boeing. You guys just reported your third quarter earnings, Dave. Another massive loss. More job cuts are coming. Are you more concerned now than you were, let's say, 3 months ago about the state of the airline industry and potential recovery over the next couple of years?
Good morning, Phil. No, I'm still quite confident in the next couple of years. There's no question that this second wave, as it hits the United States and Europe, is taking a toll. And we will not finish the year, as in our airline customers will not finish the year in line with their early expectations. I think they all believe they'd be somewhere in that 40 to 50% of 2019 traffic as we cross the finish line this year. I suspect it'll be closer to 30 to 35%. That's true both here and maybe even to a greater extent in Europe. And then the flip side is Asia, and Asia seems to be coming back and has almost recovered its 2019 schedules.
Dave, you guys have announced that you're going to be cutting about another 11,000 jobs by the end of next year, essentially eliminating 18% of your workforce. If you go back to the beginning of this year, all the way through the end of next year, are you in a position yet to say, I think that's it? I think we will have right-sized the business, at least the commercial airplane business by then?
Well, I'm very close to being right about that. I will never just draw a floor. On the other hand, we've got to make the adjustments that we've got to make. Our production rates will hit their low, the same production rates that we've described previously, will hit their low at about the midpoint of next year. And so those gradual reductions as we move rates down will occur over that period of time. I do believe that those rates are appropriate, knowing everything I know and based on every latest conversation with airlines around the world. So yes, I'm confident that that the forecast that we're handing out today is a conservative forecast that we can live to. I also believe by the end of next year, there's a chance the psychology with respect to the virus, if provided a vaccine shows up somewhere over the course of next year, will be very different. And then I'm hoping that the recovery comes sooner rather than later.
You have $27 billion in liquidity at the end of the third quarter. You guys have made it clear that you will pull other levers if need be. Do you expect to need to pull any more levers this year or, let's say, in the next 6 months?
Well, I don't want to predict that. I will say the $25 billion we raised based on the world we see ahead was an appropriate number and a good number. And it remains adequate for us to deliver on the plans that we have ahead of us. But having said that, we will stay conservative on this front. Liquidity is the metric of the day for the travel industry and for Boeing. And we have to keep our eyes squarely focused on it, stay conservative with the balance sheet, make sure we've got enough. So when the turn happens, we're ready for it and we can respond to what I think will be ultimately a robust recovery.
Street. First question, do you think that the MAX is the most important thing facing Boeing, or do you think it's liquidity?
No, it's always been the most important. The two are perfectly related. The MAX has cost us a lot of money, and we have had to sort of up the ante with respect to liquidity to make up for the fact that we couldn't ship the world's most popular airplane. We are getting very close, I believe, to the finish line with respect to certifying the MAX and to begin deliveries. We have been patient. Our regulators around the world have worked constructively with us, and I think we're at that moment. So I'm not going to predict by day or week, by the fourth quarter, I believe we will be in recovery mode with respect to the MAX. And I'm very proud of our team, and I'm very proud of that airplane. It is a remarkable machine and as safe as anything in the air.
Mr. Kim, why is it possible that people do not understand the narrative that airplanes are safer? I mean, yesterday we had a terrific study come out of Harvard University talking about a gate-to-gate experience and how it's certainly safer than going to the grocery store, going to a restaurant. And yet, and 19 people is what we understand that you could argue have gotten COVID since this started in airplanes, and people wear masks. There'll be testing soon. And yet I keep hearing the same thing. Who the heck would want to get on a plane? Why is that the narrative and not the correct narrative?
Well, it's definitely not the correct narrative. And Jim, you've been pretty well ahead of this whole subject with respect to travel. It is an incredibly safe environment. That in-cabin experience probably as safe as anything, any enclosed space you can imagine. Boeing did its study. And remember, we designed these cabins so that they are refreshed. Every 2 to 3 minutes, all the air in a cabin is refreshed. It is run through a HEPA filter, same thing that filters air in an ICU. Even if you're sitting next to somebody, it's the equivalent of being 7 feet away from them. And with the protocols the airlines have now called out and require with respect to masks, it's a remarkably safe environment. So the word is getting out. Between Boeing's study, IATA's announcements, a recent study by Transcom with the military, and now the Harvard study, they have all said precisely the same thing. It's an incredibly safe environment, as you said. Compared to a grocery store, I think you'd choose the in-cabin experience.
Dave, last week we heard from Southwest Airlines and Gary Kelly. He was right here on this show after they reported their Q3 earnings, or the loss of the third quarter, all the airlines reporting losses. And during the analyst call, he came out, as did other executives at Southwest, and they said, look, we're interested in a smaller single-aisle airplane, whether it's the 737 MAX 7 or potentially the Airbus A220. And that has people saying, is it possible one of your longest, most loyal customers might go to Airbus? How do you convince people that you will keep Southwest in the family?
Well, first of all, I can't remember a single deal or competition at any airline anywhere in the world where we weren't facing a direct competitor. So we're doing that again here at Southwest, and we're going to put our very best foot forward, and we're going to try to win in every way we can. And in the meantime, we're going to support Southwest, as you said. The majority of their installed fleet for a long time coming is going to be Boeing airplanes. We hope it stays all Boeing. We're going to compete to win. And, you know, that's all I could say, that it's in Gary's court to make those decisions. We are confident we have a very competitive airplane to offer.
Dave, you've got a number of airlines that have indicated they're not ready to pull the trigger, but they are starting to look at the other side of the pandemic when they want to have the freshest, most fuel-efficient fleets available. When do you start to see those orders or those commitments start to come in? Are we looking at 6 months down the road? Do you think it might happen even sooner than that? What's your sense?
Well, there's a psychology here, and I believe the vaccine is central to that psychology. And if I look forward, at least relative to our original prognosis of 3 to 5 years, the vaccine, by all accounts, seems to be way ahead of where we imagined it would be. Because we guessed it would be sometime in 22 or 3 based on historic development cycles for vaccines. So if a vaccine comes, if a vaccine begins to be distributed globally in the first half of next year, I think by the second half, we have a whole new psychology. And in light of the incredible number of retirements of airplanes that are going on as we speak, I believe that recovery will be quite robust. I can't predict the month or the day, but I do believe it will be robust. And then the challenge for the airplane manufacturers is going to be to respond to it. The silver lining for us is we've got a big inventory of airplanes. I wish we didn't, but we do. And ultimately, when that recovery comes, we believe we're going to be advantaged in satisfying it.
Quickly, Dave, what are you most concerned about when you look at the global market right now? Is it Europe? Is it here in the U.S. and the coming wave of cases that many are predicting with COVID-19?
Yeah, it's a great question. Honestly, Europe's my biggest concern. And it really relates to the entry protocols and quarantine requirements that are getting called out from country to country to country. Of course, here in the U.S., we have a little bit of that, and it worries us. We want to make sure whatever happens is very consistent. But in Europe, those entry protocols, I think, are going to be tougher. So we are lobbying alongside with the airlines and other institutions representing the travel industry to get some consistency, to make sure that testing is the right level of testing, and ultimately to quiet down or dampen down the number of quarantines that are required for the flying public. So Europe is a little more of concern to me than here in the U.S., although, you know, when you're talking the levels we're talking, I'd be crazy not to say I'm concerned about all of it.
Dave Calhoun. Dave, thank you very much for joining us this morning on Squawk on the Street. Carl, you heard from Dave himself. I mean, the concern is, how do you manage this pandemic in terms of eventually getting people back in the air, visiting places? And Europe right now, as you guys know, with the quarantines over there, I mean, it's a mess. You talk with airline executives about Europe, and none of them are optimistic right now.
Phil, thank you for bringing that important interview to us. As you said, Europe is definitely on the front burner today. Our Phil LeBeau in Chicago. We'll take a break. We'll get to some of the earnings movers of the morning. And that includes GE and MasterCard, UPS, Microsoft, Raytheon, the social media CEOs in front of Senate Commerce today on Section 230. We'll talk about that as well as the Dow looks to open lower by about 600 points.
You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
Looking at some pre-market weakness today, you can see futures sharply lower as we start this Wednesday, coming off of a three-day losing streak for the Dow and markets at about three-week lows. Jim, it's not just about futures, though. 10-year yield, about a two-week low. Everyone's flocking back to the dollar. Oil's down almost 6%.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned oil because one of the themes, and we're going to speak to GE later, one of the themes of this quarter is the rather dramatic fleeing from oil, not just by investors, by almost every company I deal with. These carbon neutral declarations, they're real. And I think a lot of people are coming to grips. A lot of portfolio managers are coming to grips with that it's not an idle thing to go carbon neutral 2030. And the way to do it is to cut out oil. And I think that oil is, I've been beating this drum that it's uninvestable. When I look at these quarters, one of the things that is the going in every single earnings report, David, every report is how they're able to get out of oil faster than others. That is not an environment where you can own an oil stock.
No, it's not. Listen, you know, barring the pandemic, of course, that we have been focused on for obvious reasons these last 7 months, I think we'd be talking a lot more about ESG and the mandates on allocated capital that are coming along with it and its growth in importance. And to your point, Jim, it's not just lip service at this point for many of these corporations that have put out when they're going to get carbon neutral by. It does seem to be something they are potentially more committed to now. And it's very important. It shows up obviously there in terms of oil, but in so many other areas, whether it's diversity and inclusion, pure governance, so many different areas where corporations certainly seem to be moving more quickly and more aggressively than does certainly the national government in dealing with some of these issues because they feel like it is in their best interest to do so based on what they're hearing from their shareholders, their customers, and their employees. That said, when you got Germany and France starting to go, I don't know if you want to call it lockdown or whatever, and right. You've got, I mean, did you see the 10-year bond yield at points negative 0.63.
Well, they're back.
You can understand
Madrid.
Why demand may be starting to come down again, or at least concerns.
They got the Madrid rules, which is that you can't go out. I mean, my daughter lives in Spain, and the rule was that you get a day that you're allowed to go out, and that's it. And that's where I think Europe is going back to, Carl. It's not an environment where you want to hop on a 737 Max, go around, maybe buy a Euro pass. No, because you can't get off anywhere.
Yeah, Jim, it has nothing to do with restrictions either. It's just consumer decisions at this point is sort of what's driving some of the caution. We'll take another break here. By the way, we mentioned GE. We're going to talk to Larry Culp about that surprise profit later on this morning. Stocks up almost 5% pre-market. Don't go away.
Canva presents stories to keep you up at night. It was an ordinary work day until...
The Singapore presentation is at
3 a.m.
The office was shocked.
But that's when we sleep.
Maya made it less scary with Canva.
I'll just record my presentation so Singapore can watch it anytime.
Record and present anytime with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
We have 3 minutes to go before we get an opening bell for what is going to be a volatile session, certainly one that's going to be down. Jim, we heard from Boeing, of course, which is a big defense contractor still as well.
30%
last night you had, we didn't really talk defense at all with Mr. Calhoun, but last night you had Greg Hayes on, of course, a guest we always enjoy having here as well. RTX has not performed particularly well. It's a feature on your Mad Dash.
No, I mean, look, when I had Greg Hayes on last night, and he is very, very bearish on the airline business, which obviously is incredibly important. I mean, he's talking about maybe not coming back for 3 years, and they're furiously trimming, trying to get down, just like GE is, just like Boeing is. They're all trying to at least cut to 20% of the workforce. But what he said to me is really interesting, which was, what are you going to do? A year ago, you were going full bore. You were trying to hire everybody to meet the demand, and then suddenly the demand is full stop. And thank heavens for defense. One of the things he did remind us, because we have the election, is Democrats support defense in the same way Republicans do. Defense is the savior here because $70 billion book of business. But I think more important, we're in a strange world, David, where China is no longer just a considered to be in Washington an industrial rival. It's considered to be a country that we have to worry about in terms of being an actual, not Cold War. I don't want to say hot war because it's not believed. But, David, you know, I got to tell you, under Trump, there is a belief that everybody has to be armed who's our friends. And that is the savior of that company.
Yeah, it would seem to be. And obviously, as you say, China very aggressive in the South China Sea. Unclear where that goes, but probably nowhere good.
I was waiting for you to ask about the HVAC division and the elevator division.
Both of which have been spun off in the form of
balanced
Carrier and Otis, and both have done very well since they've been since they were separated.
Otis, remarkable quarter, not talked about nearly enough. I mean, it was just fantastic, even versus a summer session where they were talking about maybe not doing as well. There's a lot of companies that are doing well, and they're all being, I'd say, blotted out by stay at home. And I think that when you look at what Raytheon has to do with Boeing, and when you look at what GE has to do, and you look at what we'll find out later Honeywell has to do, it's really ugly. But Dave, we don't have to worry, you see, because the stimulus, all those people will be taken care of. Right?
Yeah, right. No, it's coming.
It's coming.
Oh, and yeah.
I think the speaker's talking, David, to the Secretary of Treasury.
Sure she is.
They're talking. They're saying hi. They're saying happy Halloween.
I think they're in some sort of Groundhog Day scenario,
yeah.
Carl.
Well, terrific. Why don't we go commercial-free? It's so bad.
I think we might just do that, guys, because obviously market's going to be volatile, as David said, just open. There's a look at breadth, which is, sort of reminds you how Monday opened. By the way, thanks to Ryan Detrick over at LPL, statistically today, October 28th, is the best day of the year for the S&P 500. I'm not sure. There's still time to turn it around, Jim.
It's
you know,
early.
You guys were talking
it's
about...
It's early, Carl.
It is early. It's early. Way early. Jim, you were talking about sort of the migration away from oil and gas and Greg Hayes on your show last night. I mean, Raytheon did say, and Hayes said on the call, potential for a hydrogen-powered jetliner, granted, by 2035. But that's an area where they're going to start investing in now.
I am so glad you mentioned hydrogen because we also, when we speak to Larry Culp, They're making a major push in a different kind of hydrogen, but still in power plant. Hydrogen's become a very big theme, and a lot of that Plug Power is 35,000 vehicles that are now used. How do you get to carbon neutral if you're Walmart, if you're Amazon? It's hydrogen. The hydrogen rush, this is green hydrogen, is going to be the next big thing. Obviously, we're in the bridge fuel, nat gas moment. But again, these things happen far faster than people realize. Far faster. And when I Plug Power on this week, they said, look, this is the fulcrum moment where companies are saying, we need hydrogen. Planes, we need hydrogen. You get power, we need hydrogen. It's going to happen, Carl. And it's a very positive story. David mentioned that, you know what, if it weren't for the stay at home, not able to go out to a restaurant, we'd be talking ESG. David, yeah. Hydrogen is now.
Is it really now?
Yeah, it's now.
Like I thought automated automobiles would be. I mean, 3 years ago, we were talking about it.
If you're Microsoft and you're telling your suppliers that they better get green.
Yeah.
Well, what do?
They get green.
And it's going to be, it's going to be long haul trucks after these forklifts.
Well, now you're making me think of Nikola.
Well,
between hydrogen and trucks.
Well, they've got trucks, David, that run, that go downhill. Like there's no, like the greatest,
that stock's been hanging in there at the $20 range. Let's move on to Microsoft, though, a far larger company that reported earnings. Jim, I mean, the stock is down. I think there was one downgrade I saw, guys, as well. But generally, you know, you're talking about what? $37.2 billion in revenue, up 12% year over year. Gross margin dollars increased 15%, operating income increased 25%, $1.82 a share. That was up 32% or 30% in constant currency. Sounds pretty good to me.
I think it's insane. I think that they could have said anything they wanted in terms of forecast. I think they could have talked about gaming and be much better, or LinkedIn be much better. There was no reason whatsoever that this stock is being punished for what was an amazing quarter. And Azure, which is, of course, their cloud business, is remarkable. Now, this is the one, if you want to know, David used to ask me the key to this market, Carl. It's this stock, because this stock has to bottom before people start buying anything else. And I really, when I go, I talk to some of these analysts who cover it, and they're all kind of amazed, but they were gun-shy. They were gun-shy because the narrative was controlled last night by people who said, that is a real guy down. It's not a guy down. Saudi Nadella is just not a person who's going to come out and say, listen, all the analysts are wrong. We're going to do much better. So I find the Microsoft as being the one that's the best opportunity. But wait, right now, still too early.
Yeah, Jim, we'll listen, maybe a little bit later. We have a bit of sound from Nadella last night on the call. UPS, Jim? Well, let's do UPS first, though. 228 beats 190. We'd seen a lot of analysts get in front of this print saying that cost cuts plus pricing power plus seasonal strength equals margin expansion, and it does look like that is going to be one of the bright spots of the morning.
Well, I have Carol Tomei on tonight.
Not anymore.
And it's one of those stories where she did say that she can't give a forecast. Saying you can't give a forecast to these analysts, it's like they're jackals. And can't give a forecast means we're going to do terribly. I think that's wrong. Carol Tomei did give forecasts, helped give forecasts at Home Depot, where she was before. So I think people are reluctant to buy the stock. I think that's a mistake. She's talking about double-digit growth. She's talking about making money on the double-digit growth. And that's something that United Parcel hasn't done. Now, the stock's ticking up because I just said something good. You stupid people who are buying it right now, don't you realize there's big institutional money trying to get out of it? I'm just talking to the seller.
Got it.
And the buyers are coming in. let the stock come in. Now, I mean, my Chapel Trust, because I think it's really important when you can talk about all the good ones. Let me talk about one that I was on the other side of. I actually thought that MasterCard, down 50 points the last few days, would find a level. But MasterCard is an international company, and there's not a lot of international travel. Got that one wrong. I do believe that can bottom, but not yet. But United Parcel and MasterCard are, I mean, United Parcel and Microsoft are two that had unbelievable quarters. And David, this market is being, the tune is being set by people who are panicking. They are panicking when Carol Tomei did not say how big the holiday season is going to be. I mean, she could have set up 20 if she wanted to.
Right.
Because if we're staying in place, David, we're not going to the stores. And that means United Parcel.
It does, although, again, the stock had an enormous move this year.
Well,
already, Jim.
Yeah, it's yields 2.5. And
say again, yeah, yields 2.5.
It had an enormous move because Carol Tomei came in, and we all know her as
being. Well, and FedEx has had an incredible move also.
Well, I mean, they are part of the parcel of the...
They
you
are.
You just moved the stock down 4 with your negativity, and I don't blame you.
That was negative? Look at that.
Yeah, it was negative.
It's moving along with the market overall. We have an S&P that is down almost 2%, of course, and this is largely, it would seem, COVID-related.
Right.
We've talked about it already, potential, you say lockdowns, potential restrictions
right.
being put in place
yes.
in France and Germany, France in particular with significantly rising cases. Of course, here in the U.S., we're all facing the same
right.
or a similar rise in cases in many states that are hitting all-time highs.
Wisconsin,
and unfortunately,
Texas.
Hospitalizations too,
yeah.
Jim.
How about Florida, where they said, come one, come all, indoor dining.
Yeah.
Indoor dining being identified over and over again as the single Harvard just the other day, the single worst place, unless you seek COVID. I mean, if you're in Carl, if you're in one of these trials, you got to go out to eat because that's where you're going to be able to
yeah.
test whether you're going to get COVID.
That's exactly the point out of Morgan Stanley today, Jim. 3 weeks slower than that we thought, they say, in these trials because their assumption is that the trial infection rates are 50% lower than the general population. You've been saying this for weeks.
Yeah. I mean, you got to go out. You got to go out and about. You got to expose yourself to COVID. And that's not, look, I mean, it's not like you get it and you say, you know what, let me go to a jam-packed stadium and really figure out what's going to happen. I mean, no one wants to get sick or even risk getting sick. So it does take a little longer than the president one. And the president, what, identified what, David Pfizer?
J&J.
You know, J&J's not, when you get the shot, they're not saying, go forth and get some COVID.
No, they're not.
No. Hey, David, by the way, General Electric's up. You want to take that one down? Automatic data, you want to crush that one? Chubb? How about Chubb?
Might
be on the side of Evan?
I'm actually going to take this opportunity to do a story on a company that's probably going to send the shares higher. How about that?
I don't like that.
Can I do that now?
Out of character.
You mind if I have a little favor report in here, guys? Can we do that? Let's do it.
Oh, I think
not that large a company, but it's something we've been following closely here.
How about CoreLogic?
And the name is CoreLogic. Yeah, CoreLogic. Remember, a huge beneficiary, by the way, of the boom in the housing market, mortgages. They provide so much information that goes into the lenders making decisions and so much other data as well. And by the way, they have raised their EBITDA forecast dramatically. But what we can tell you now, and remember, quick timeline check here. Remember, Kanai and Senator made a bid some time ago. Then they raised to 66. They're challenging for the board. You've got a special meeting on November 17th to potentially replace the entire board. But what I can tell you now is, according to people familiar with the situation, is that they are engaging with, and there's a look at that timeline, by the way, just to get people up to speed here where we were. But the news I can share with you is CoreLogic has received what I'm told is at least potential interest at levels above $80 a share from multiple parties. And given that, they are engaging with those parties as well. They include PE firms. They include others as well that may be strategic in nature. We can get rid of that timeline, guys. These multiple parties are interested, obviously, in buying the company. There's a look, by the way, at the increase in EBITDA guidance. And if you want to try and draw some sort of a scenario that does get you into the 80s, well, it's not that hard. If you apply a multiple that's anywhere near 13 times, you get there. They have raised their EBITDA guidance significantly as a result of strength in the housing market, of things that they've been doing at the company as well. Management would tell you to change the composition of their revenue base to make it more recurring as well, and for so many different reasons. But it does appear that they're moving into auction mode, essentially. Those are my words, certainly not those necessarily the sources that I've been talking to, but they have, in fact, signed one non-disclosure agreement. I'm told as well that there may be others that they're signing. And again, it does appear to be multiple parties that are expressing interest based on public information of bids that may come above $80 a share. Nothing says they'll get there. They still have the special meeting a few weeks out where potentially shareholders, and by the way, many of those holders are hedge funds and index funds at this point. Some of the large long onlys and fundamental investors, so to speak, are out. T. Rowe and some others have left the stock at this point, but it could be beneficial, of course, to Senator, which does own as much as 15% of the company's shares at this point. And so it does appear CoreLogic think is willing to fully explore these expressions of interest, take them in, try to understand exactly what they are, how they'd be financed, and whether or not they can get to a deal or not in the 80s, unclear at this point, but that's where things stand. I would also, by the way, a company I wasn't that familiar with called CoStar Group, I am told, is amongst those that has expressed interest in acquiring the company. And interesting to note, its CEO in their conference call said, quote, "One common theme for us has been to use acquisitions to enter a new closely related real estate segment." That would seem to confirm to a certain extent right. What had been some questions there about CoStar. That was from their earnings call as well on the 27th. So Jim wanted to get that in there on CoreLogic again, a company that has benefited from, of course, very strong housing market and seemingly is now in a position to potentially hold an auction to sell itself.
That's
no comment from the company.
Great call, because obviously they're fintech real estate, which is an intersection of two bull markets. Zillow, a little less than that, but that's a great report. They used to be the guys that I used to rely on to figure out in 2007, 2008 how bad housing was. So very good guys. Now, David, this is one you haven't been able to sink. I'm going to bring in Larry Kolb. Shares of General Electric jumping this morning after beating earnings estimates. And by the way, it was a legitimate beat. It was not one of those paper beats. Why don't we have CEO Larry Kolb come on right now. Larry, good to see you.
Jim, David, good morning.
All right, so Larry, when I go through the usual deck, what I notice is this time, it's not a discussion about how important aerospace is. You're talking about industrial. You're talking about aviation, but you talk about healthcare, which seems to me to be in a course of real growth. Power and renewables no longer seem to be the weak sister to this your company. I'm wondering whether we're getting to a narrative with the layoffs that you've had to do in aerospace, where in 2021, we're going to be talking about aviation, healthcare, and power pretty much equally.
Well, Jim, I think that there's an important role for all four of our industrial segments to play at GE. And you see that today in the earnings release, right? $500 million of free cash flow in the third quarter, better than we would have anticipated despite the revenue pressure. Clearly aviation driven. We were down organically 12%, but had a really standout quarter in healthcare. And I think the turnarounds we talked about even before COVID at the beginning of the year in both power and renewables are gathering momentum. We came into this year knowing that aviation was a stellar business, healthcare right behind it, and we had work to do in power and renewables. Those teams have done, I think, a really credible job this year on the cost side of things, driving cash better, all the while continuing to innovate, be it with our 7HA turbines at gas power, let alone what we're doing both in onshore and offshore wind and renewables. So plenty more work to do, but I think you see signs of traction here.
Now, I do believe that renewables had considered to be an asterisk. That's no longer the case. That healthcare, you sold the crown jewels. I now feel that that's no longer the case. Is it possible that if you get, say, any sort of rebound in aerospace, that 2021 could be a very meaningful year for GE?
Well, we already believe, Jim, and we've said publicly, reiterating today, that we think next year will be a positive free cash flow year for us. Positive here in the third quarter. We think we have line of sight to at least $2.5 billion of free cash in the fourth quarter. But on a full year basis, we're likely to be negative. Next year, we think that turns positive in no small part because of what's happening in renewables and power, right? We've got nice volume dynamics in wind, of course. But a host of legacy cost and project issues that we are working our way through, all the while investing in our offshore wind business. Excited about the wins with our Haliade X 13-megawatt platform. So that's a multi-year story in the making. I think we'll turn positive from a free cash perspective in gas power next year, given the very good work the team has done there. Again, not only in terms of cost reduction, but being smarter about the new business we take on, the underwriting and the attendant project execution. Healthcare should continue to be a strong performer for us. And I think we've got aviation ready for continued sequential softness. But if we get any sort of recovery in 21 or thereafter, I think we're poised to be full beneficiaries of that that change.
All right, so Larry, what would you say to people who say this is not sustainable? You took $1 billion of cost actions aviation year to date, $2 billion in cash actions, which basically says, you know, they're trying to cut their way to prosperity. So therefore, don't trust this rebound.
Well, I think that that's just plain wrong, Jim. If you look at the way we have run this business over the last 2 years, the way we have talked about the issues from the past, the way we're working our way through them, the improvements that we're making through the application of lean principles, really getting close to the businesses and making sure we're driving safety and quality, let alone delivery improvements for our customers, well before we talk about cost. Coupling that with GE's traditional strengths, not only in technology, but in global reach, this is a company with tremendous capabilities. We are far from our full potential, and I think what people hopefully get a glimpse of today is the building momentum we have toward realizing that full potential. It's a game of inches. We've said that all along. Much more work to do, but I think we're demonstrating traction. That bodes well for the future. We know COVID is an uncertainty,
yeah,
but we can't do anything about that. We're working on those things within our control.
Right. Larry, it's David. Yeah, you can only control what you can. You can't control the duration or magnitude of the outbreak, unfortunately. You can only respond to it. One thing, of course, you mentioned is you've got, what, more than $2 billion of costs and $3 billion of cash actions that are, what, I think you said 75% complete. Do you need to start again? I mean, is that going to be enough, given you can only control what you can control?
Well, David, those are big actions, and you're right. We're about 75% of the way through that work. We think we'll finish most of that by the end of the year, which is part of the visibility we have around the $2.5 billion in cash we've talked about for the fourth quarter. But again, back to lean. In the spirit of continuous improvement, there is always opportunity. And while I don't think we have necessarily a restructuring effort on par with what we've done here in 2020, completing this work gives us line of sight to additional opportunities to continue to be more efficient with where we put money, be it reducing inventories, be it the way we think about capital expenditures, all the while making sure we are investing in those things that matter most for our customers and our investors, be that new technology, be that strengthening our commercial organizations, be it the sales and marketing folks, in addition to the field support teams that are with our customers every day.
Well, you mentioned lean. Explain to people what that actually means. You said on the call it's the strongest common denominator. What does that mean?
Well, I think when we talk about the transformation of GE, we're really talking about a lean transformation. And we're really just borrowing from the Toyota production system in these fundamental principles around focusing on the customer, eliminating waste, and always getting better, continuous improvement, Kaizen. And doing that in a way that is geared toward managing the business the same way every day and doing that as close to the customer as we possibly can. I know that sounds simple,
yeah,
but it's also powerful. And that is very much the way we are changing the way we operate in every GE business around the world today.
Yeah, I mean, you can get lean and you can be, you know, more agile and everything else, but you can also get weaker if you get too lean. How do you know when when enough has been done?
Well, I don't believe that, David. To be honest, we could have a long conversation perhaps on that. But I think what we're really talking about is building muscle in the organization, right? To know when we have an opportunity to serve a customer better, to see waste in the form of a cash expenditure that next time around we want to forego. So I think it's all about building muscle. It's not just about cut, management by objective. It's very much a long-term process-oriented way to build sustainable competitive advantage and ultimately satisfy customers and shareholders.
All right, so Larry, let's say we get a change to the White House and we get Vice President Biden comes in. There's a page in your deck, page 8, talks about renewable energy and power and orders. I would have to expect that there's a contingent in that administration that says that coal must be phased out 2024. Nuclear done. What can you do with renewables that would make it so that, say, the younger people who watch this show want to buy your stock? And can you make it so that it's as profitable, gross margin, as the traditional natural gas plant?
Well, Jim, in September, we talked about a new purpose for GE, rising to the challenge of building a world that works. That's really part and parcel of what drives us to lead in the energy transition. We've got similar opportunities in the other businesses, but I would say both in renewables and in power, as we see countries around the world migrate from coal and from nuclear, there are going to be opportunities. We're a leader in onshore wind today. We just aren't as profitable. We aren't generating positive cash. We have to manage that business better. Again, I think we are demonstrating that we are making progress in that regard. We think our gas business has an important role to play in support of the renewables as we move forward here, not only in terms of conventional gas turbines today, but also as countries and companies around the world look to find a role for hydrogen, which we have a tremendous and important experience in. So we have a number of different ways in which we can play the energy transition. Our leadership in onshore wind is first amongst them. We just need to deliver better financial performance there, and we think that's possible.
How are you doing versus Siemens and Philips in healthcare? And can you get segment margin from 16.8 up to, say, 2025, which would really change the total mosaic of GE?
Well, Jim, we have a couple of formidable competitors in healthcare, no doubt. But when we sold the biopharma business as part of our deleveraging earlier this year, what was left behind was a $17 billion leader in precision health. And when we talk about precision health, what we're really referencing there is personalized medicine, more efficient delivery around the world. And we are as well positioned as any company to do that. You saw double-digit organic growth in that business in the third quarter, healthy operating margin expansion as well, just a standout quarter in that regard. There's going to be more margin expansion. I'm not sure we're ready to go to 20 or 25%, but I think over time, if we're able to grow in the low to mid-single-digit range, knock out 25, call it 75 basis points of operating margin expansion per year, that's a business that's going to surprise a lot of people.
What about good old energy? Onshore demand, offshore deals as well. We watch the price of oil declining right now. In fact, concerns about global growth. How are you managing that?
Well, we don't have a lot of direct exposure there anymore, given the transition away from Baker Hughes. We still have our equity stake, but we have begun to move out of that. David, what our primary exposure is really in our gas power business, where our utilization of the installed base has been relatively consistent this year, despite COVID. We have seen some oil price pressure playing out in our services business, particularly in upgrades, where we thought we had some upgrade opportunities, particularly in the Middle East. Given what's happened, those opportunities have faded a bit. So we're not banking on those coming back anytime soon. But that's really where we have the most direct pressure from the oil price dynamics in our power segment.
No, Larry, thank you so much. I know there are a lot of people who are banking on a turn, and I know that you've been working around the clock to do so. It's great that you came on the show. It's always good to see you.
Thank you.
Carl?
Dow session low, Jim, was down 589. Not far from that, as we're getting some wire reports about potential lockdown proposals out of France and Germany. Let's get to Rick Santelli this morning. Hey, Rick.
Hello, Carl. We're looking at our fourth session down in yields. Here's four sessions of 10-year note yields. And right now we're down just a basis point and a half or so. But as the S&P's now hit down 2%, I would look for some of that contagion to move into the treasuries in the form of buying and safe harbor. Looking for sessions of boons. I heard David talking about it earlier. If you do a month to date of tens for 2 weeks now, this is about the lowest yield should we close here. But going back to those boons, they're now at 7-month low yields. That chart starts in March. And if we continue on the notion of the news you've just referenced regarding possible shutdowns in places like Germany, even though, you know, there's a lot of debate as to whether shutdowns are the way to go, here's the DAX. The DAX is at the lowest level in nearly 5 months. That chart starts in May. And finally, we know there's safe harbor in treasuries and some of the other sovereign credits, but now look at the dollar. The dollar's usurping the euro. The euro has been on a slide. Here's a 2-day of the dollar index in those two sessions. It's up nearly 1 cent. Carl, Jim, David, back to you.
All right. Rick, thank you very much. Jim, Art Cashin says early flush, circling some wagons, 10:30 to 11, Europe close will be fun to watch. Your point is Microsoft may be the tell in the first part of the session.
Yeah, I mean, look, we've got two markets going on. We've got this tech market, which a lot of people feel is beginning to implode. I disagree with that. And then we have the rest of whether the industrial market could take us out or whether the renovation market, look at Masco on a really good quarter, Sherwin-Williams. I see pockets of strength. I think Art is always making some really good points. We got to see the Europe close because Europe is in panic mode right now. They really are in panic mode. And I think that Spain will follow in panic mode. Italy will follow in panic mode. I think that that's not the way we're approaching it here. I think we're approaching it that a lot of companies have found ways to make money despite this. So, Carl, let's watch GE. I think the GE maybe is a different GE. We did not, I mean, listen to David's questions, my questions. We could have just asked about nothing but aviation.
Yeah.
Instead, we asked about other businesses that we really haven't given a darn about.
That's true. Well, he's controlling, again, what he can't control and sort of doing what he can on aviation, right? But there are other businesses that are benefiting, or
yes,
at least neutral.
He mentioned hydrogen, David. I'm telling you, that's my theme. Although he's not doing green hydrogen, just so we know.
Right.
Carl, I mean, again, I'm focused on what these younger investors are interested in, and they need to see hydrogen. They need to see less fossil fuel. They need to see wind. They love wind. I know our president is. What was it, the problem with the wind?
It's two. It's birds. Windmills,
cancer.
Unfortunately, do kill birds and then cancer. Yeah, but they're not as big. I mean, cats kill a lot more birds.
They do?
Some incredible number, like 2.4 billion birds.
Cats are great against mice.
Literally, the cat.
Yeah.
The cat cause of death is off the charts if you're comparing.
Is there anything we can do about
this? Carl's tweets that I see. I learned so much from that was yesterday.
It's like 2 billion birds.
It's incredible. I know. Jonathan Franzen
wrote a lot about that. How about when the birds killed Susan Plouchette?
Yeah, I always liked her.
I always liked her, too. She really had it.
She was the best.
I know that's a little field.
Jim, you did say Europe panicking. I think it's important to point out Germany has handled this. I mean, how many deaths are there in Germany? 10,000?
No, but I'm saying that.
A little bit more overall.
They're reacting.
We have 28 times the deaths, something like that.
But they're reacting as if, okay, listen, we got to go not just in lockdown mode, but we have got to shut whole places. And I think that what will happen is that people will stop going out if there's no place to go to. How's that for a little wizardry?
Right, but you described it as panic. Is it appropriate panic?
I think that they're treating it as if we have nothing for COVID. And I'm not saying that everyone's going to take a couple of Regeneron and go out on the campaign trail. But I am saying that we are better with therapeutic. We are better with a drip, with something for IV. We know how to handle people so that when they get to the hospital, it's not catastrophic. That doesn't mean that the numbers don't reflect that we could lose a lot of people, but I'm not.
Yeah,
I don't want to be too positive. But
Jim, I mean, right now the story is trying not to get to the hospital as capacity there gets a little tighter. Gottliebaum this morning saying, I mean, saying basically what you've been advocating for months. And that is masks.
Yeah.
They're practically free.
Right.
And whether you believe in the science or not, I mean, call it a hedge, right? A hedge that you won't have to go to the hospital.
My mask initiative I'm doing with Mark Benioff through xprize.org/mask is now being led by companies, by Honeywell, by 3M. It's being led by Under Armour. It's being led by companies that are taking the leadership mode. They have the National Association of Manufacturers, NAM, because they're not going to let the U.S. government be at their lassitude influence our country. And I salute those companies. I mean, the other day, someone said, what is business really doing? Well, you should see what 3M's doing. And I know Mike Roman had a tough day to stop, but he is determined to save lives through masks. And you know what? He's not going to let the government decide that people should die from not wearing masks. David, these companies are serious about developing masks because they know the government provides no leadership whatsoever when it comes to dying.
There has been a lack of leadership, it would seem on a national level, although there's still frustration to a certain extent with 3M's the inability of consumers, Jim, to get a hold of those masks.
Well, there's not a national mask mandate, so to speak, but we're going to change that, too. Do not give up on
me. Oh, there is in Russia now.
Russia.
You saw Putin yesterday. National mask mandate. Yes.
Yeah, did see
so
that.
They moved on
master
that front.
Death there.
Jim, what's on Mad tonight?
Okay, I've got United Parcel, which is the subject of a dramatic decline. I think that's wrong. Mark Tritton, who is the subject of a dramatic decline. I think that's wrong. And Anthony Noto's company is private, so it's not subject of a dramatic decline. And what a stadium. Holy cow. I want to be one of the five people who goes to the next game.
It is a nice stadium.
There we go. I'm going to inject a little bit of positive thinking in an otherwise very gloomy day.
Netflix is up.
Oh, thank you, David.
You're welcome.
You never go out anyway.
Yeah, and 3M. 3M was up.
Look, 3M, I was going with Mike Grumman. Well, the sellers there are just pessimists. I'm done with pessimism. I'm going to neutrality.
Really?
All right, I'll stick with pessimism.
There you go.
Whatever.
Jim, we'll see you at 6. Mad Money, of course, at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. You've been listening to The Opening Bell on CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.